Good morning, family. It's a joy to be together. I'm so thankful we're all here, and I'm thankful for everyone streaming in this morning. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your path straight. Whew, I dropped the ball in that this week. About 2.5 weeks ago, I was working on our house, and we were pouring the concrete for our foundation. And while running around during that process, I ended up scraping my side of my leg on a rusty metal stake and gouged a pretty significant gash into my leg. And we were busy working so much on stuff, I was like, ow, that really hurt, but kept taking care of things and eventually stopped bleeding on its own hours later, and I didn't think much of it. And about 10 days go by, and Annie saw my leg there, and she's like, when's the last time you got your tetanus shot? And I got to thinking about it. I was like, I don't know. Maybe, I don't think I got a tetanus shot when I went to South Africa. I had to get a bunch of different shots. I don't think tetanus was one of them. So maybe 20 years ago was the last time I got my tetanus shot. And then the next day after she mentioned that, my jaw, like muscles in my jaw started just getting sore. And I did something I knew I should not do. And that is, I looked up on the internet, early signs for tetanus. One of the first results, lockjaw, muscles in the jaw tensing up. And I'm a pretty positive, easygoing person, so I initially just kind of laughed. It's like, that's just coincidence. There's no way I have tetanus. That's crazy. So 95% of me was just laughing it off. But that 5% of my mind, trying to sleep that night, laying there, and that 5% kept whispering, but what if? What if you do have tetanus? I couldn't sleep that night. And the next day, I just kept dwelling on that, like, but what if I do have tetanus? That would be so inconvenient to have it, because it would mess up our schedule working on the house. It takes months, supposedly, to recover from tetanus. And I just kept dwelling on it and just relying on my current understanding of things. And I finally caved, and I went into a local clinic around here. I walked in, and basically it was like, please tell me I'm just crazy and I don't actually have tetanus. And they looked at me and they said, you don't have tetanus. And they gave me a booster shot for tetanus. And I could go on my way and get back to things. But I had lost days of my life due to lack of sleep because I was leaning on my own understanding. And it was not refreshment to my bones. It was not healing to my flesh when I did not trust in the Lord. I found much comfort when I went to an actual physician instead of relying on the internet for my, you know, diagnosis. Lo and behold, the internet is not a very stable foundation to base your perspectives on. Jesus is the great physician, and if we don't go to Him for understanding and for our perspective, then we are going to find ourselves more than anxious. We're going to find ourselves totally destabilized and without any proper navigation for which way is right and which way is wrong. So the message this morning, this lesson, is continuing in Colossians. We're going to be wrapping up chapter 3. And this passage directly talks about what's going on in our home life. And the title for this lesson is Interior Design. It's about getting our lives together, making sure that we're going to the great physician, that we're going to the one who designed family, the one who designed our home relationships, to making sure that we're following His design, His pattern, and we're not just left to our own devices, because that takes us to a very dark place very quickly when we just try to figure out on our own and do what we think is right instead of looking to what does God want these relationships to look like. So we are to trust and obey God's word in these things. And the things that God teaches us in this passage particularly, there's things in there that culturally are very unpopular right now in many circles. And we're going to dive into it and we are going to submit to it as God's people. It's really important that we look at these things because this type of behavior we're going to learn about here in Colossians is not something that we are instinctually drawn towards. This is a learned behavior. It's very similar to language. We didn't choose the language we were born into. For many of us, that was English. You know, we didn't choose to learn English. It's what we were born into. And if we recognize, if we were to think, I don't really like English. It's complicated. There's a lot of inconsistencies. I recognize that this is not the language I want to speak. Just recognizing that you don't like this language does not automatically give you a new language to speak. And so many of us have grown up in different homes, some of them great and solid and Christ-like. Some of us grew up in homes that were not following biblical teachings. And so in a similar way, we know the language we grew up with. And so how men and women interact in the home, how children are supposed to operate in the home, how we're supposed to work in the workplace, those we have a default setting that what we were exposed to growing up, that even if we recognize is bad, if we don't have something to replace it with, we will then tend to default to what we were born into. So this is so important because this is going to teach us what is God's design for these things. And we don't just rely on our personal experiences to navigate this life. But we can learn what does God intend for our home life. What's the interior design? And one last introductory point before we get into it is that there's this kind of there's a trap of a type of thinking. And it's this idea of the grass is always greener, where I won't be happy, I won't be content until fill in the blank of like, you know, we need to work really hard now, and then we can go on this vacation, and then everyone will be happy and everything will be okay. And those adventures, those trips, those experiences, those are like maybe 10% of your life. But getting your home life solid, your day-to-day, how do you come home after working? How do you go to bed together as a family? That's like 80 or 90% of your life and routine. And so getting that solid, getting this worked out, is going to solidify such a larger portion of your life than just trying to get these specific experiences you think will be very fulfilling. So this covers a large portion of our lives of what's life like at home and what is work like. And getting those things grounded is such a large portion of your life. So this is the things we're going to be talking about are relevant to the majority of all of our lives time-wise. And so it's super, super important. So let's now dive into it. Verse 18 of chapter 3, wives, submit to your husbands as it is fitting in the Lord. Now, I did wrestling in high school, and when I think of the word submission, like submit, I think of like submission holds and like choke holds and, you know, different arm bars and things like that. So I have a bad idea of submission just from the get-go on this. Submission, we need to define it here in this passage. This word submit is the same word used in Romans 13:1, talking about we're supposed to submit to governing authorities. And so this is not just this type of submit is definitely a form of respect, a type of I recognize some authority here, and I'm going to acknowledge that and behave in a certain manner. It's also important to understand submission is similar to, think of the word submarine, where those words mean under and water. And submission is that there is a mission, and then there is to be underneath that mission. That mission God provides, and it's supposed to be the man's mission, and then the wife then is underneath that overarching mission. Submission is not, go make me a sandwich. Yes, sir, I'll make you a sandwich. That's not the scope of submission. The mission is God has a goal and expectation and design, and the man is to be a part in carrying out that mission, and a woman is then to, and the wife is to be underneath that mission. I think it's important to note here that this is to submit to your husbands, and that this is not that you have plurality of husbands. That's a whole different conversation. But to in a marriage relationship, that you have a certain perspective of your spouse, and that husbands are to be viewed in a certain way. And with there is an unfortunate cultural influence to view husbands and men as kind of dolts and incompetent, and really not very valuable. They're kind of useless. They're just a larger child. Or, you know, there's all sorts of different stigmatizations of husbands that are very, very negative. There was this legend, and it's debatable whether how true this is. I think there's a seed of truth to it, to this event. About 1,000 years ago, somewhere in medieval Germany, there was this large city and fortress area, and there was a besieging army attacking it. And this city was very, very wealthy. It was known for having lots and lots of treasures. And while this army came up against the city, some negotiations began with the leaders of the city and the besieging army. And they made a deal. One of the women came out to the army and said, "You know, would you please let the women and the children go free?" And the army said, "Sure, we will agree to these terms." And then they then came back and said, "Would you let us leave with just carrying treasures, with whatever we can carry in our hands? There's so much treasure in here, you can have it all, but just so we're not left with nothing and just, you know, wandering, you know, totally without any sort of resource, can we leave with just carrying whatever treasure we can have in our hands?" And the military, the army that was besieging, said, agreed to that as well. So the next morning, when the women, the children come leaving the city, they don't have any of the physical treasures of the city. They leave the city carrying their husbands, and they carry the men of the city out. And since the army had agreed to these terms, they keep their word. And you have all these women carrying the men out of the city because the men were their treasures. And they viewed their men as more valuable than these physical things. And how true that is, I'm not exactly sure. But having that type of perspective of what actually matters and what do you value in your family and in your home. Now, Annie, I don't know if Annie could pick me up. I don't know if that could happen. I think I might be doomed in that situation. And Annie and I sometimes do this game where I'm like, I act like I pass out and like I'm just totally unconscious. I'm like, "Okay, get me in the car so we can go to the hospital." And she tries to drag me across the floor and she's like, "I'm calling an ambulance. There's no way this is happening." But the point of that is to think, okay, how do we view our spouses and that we consider them with great value? And when we can view them with great value, it really changes the way we go into situations and react to certain situations at home. We're also told here for wives to submit to their husbands as fitting to the Lord, and that this type of submission to your husband is by God's design. This is God's expectation on it. And do you think God knows what he's doing? You know, he designed marriage. He is the one who has constructed this relationship. And it is fitting for this to take place. And so there's definitely no small element of trust in that. This is God's design. And there's an excellent study on male headship and for men's roles in marriage and also in society, and definitely is by no means a different amount of value between men and women, but a different roles in different relationships. But the big point with this is that the Lord has a design, and that is a very trustworthy design. Now we look at husbands who are to love their wives and to not be harsh with them. Now, as a man, we really like to have definitions and clear expectations. And so when we read this, it's like, "Husbands, love your wives." One of the right questions and natural questions to ask is, okay, but what does it mean to love your wife? Does that mean put food on the table? Does that mean that I'm have X amount of hours, you know, home? What does it mean to love? And Ephesians 5:25 is a very parallel passage to this one. And let's go over here and we're going to see the definition for what does it mean to love your wife? What does that look like? So Ephesians 5, starting in verse We'll start in verse 22 because it also has relevant passage on wives to their husbands. And then in 25, it goes to husbands. Start in 22, and we'll read several verses past that. Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, and having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who cherishes it just as Christ does, he who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. So, loving your wife, the standard is as Christ loved the church. You know, what a high, high standard. But it's a standard that men are to be pursuing in this relationship, in this marriage relationship. And that type of love is not just providing with monetary stuff, food stuff, any specific thing. That type of sacrificial love is, I'm going to try to provide the highest quality of life, to create an environment and an atmosphere for you to thrive to the highest potential and extent that you can. Think about, how does Jesus love you? Like, how does he love you? What is his goal in loving you? It is for you to reach your fullest potential, to have an abundant life, not just one specific thing or experience, but for you to fulfill your destiny, for you to become what you were designed to be. And that is what men are to be bringing into a home. That type of mentality is, I'm here to lead you in a direction that is best for you, just like Jesus leads the church in the direction that's best for us. Amen. We're also told here, do not be harsh with them. You'd think that would be kind of a redundant thing. If you're supposed to love your wife and then also not be harsh with them, is it possible to love your wife and to be harsh with them? And I think so. And I think that happens when it's possible to say the right thing, but to say the right thing in the wrong way, and making sure that we don't just speak the truth, but we speak the truth in love. And men, we're sometimes very direct, to the point, problem solvers, and in that mode, there's a harshness that can be miscommunicated. I think it also has to deal with approach determines response, in that something my dad would talk about when he worked at the prison for 20 years, is that when you're approaching somebody, especially over something that there might be contention or conflict over, if you go in there with a prideful attitude, or even with, I have the authority in this, I am this, you need to submit to this, if you can approach it with more wisdom and with more humility, and not with weakness, but with meekness and with compassion, that approach determines response. I think also that it's noteworthy to think about to not be harsh with our spouses is very similar to 1 Peter 3, verse 7. Let's turn over there and read this passage together. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. This is a very eye-opening verse for me. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. So there's a lot to unpackage from this verse, and let's start by thinking about live with your wives in an understanding way. What one person might consider harsh, another person might not consider harsh. And so to make sure that you're not speaking in a harsh way means you have to understand your spouse. You need to know what is their understanding and gauging of harshness, and making sure that we are sensitive to that. It is a subjective term, and that's okay. I like things to be really clear-cut, objective, do not say this, do not do that. And then it's like, oh, that's super easy, no problem. But to not be harsh, to be understanding, requires much more attention, requires much more effort and work, but it's the right thing to do because it is a sensitivity. Everybody is so different, and that's okay. And it requires you to be much more present with the people that you are living with. Now, in addition to that, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, again, this has nothing to do with value, as the very next parts of this passage talk about we're co-heirs, that we're receiving the same inheritance, we're valued in God's eyes to the exact same amount. But in being a weaker vessel, it's like a F-350, you know, and a Ferrari. You know, an F-350 is going to be able to pull more weight, but just because it's able to pull more weight doesn't mean it's better. And a Ferrari is obviously, you know, much more nicer to look at. I see some similarities in that regard. And the weaker vessel is really talking about physical, typical strength. Some women are stronger than some men. But on a biological level, typically, men are larger and stronger than women. Not doesn't make them better, but it is a biological difference. And that difference can come into play in different relationships. And men using their size, their intimidation, disregarding women because of their lack of size and physical stature is unacceptable. So unacceptable, did you hear the last bit of this verse? That your prayers might not be hindered. That this relationship between man and woman is so important that God steps in if it is bad and says, you know, if you're not treating this person right, then we're not good. That's how serious getting this type of home life is. That's how important understanding, okay, what's God's expectations on these things? Because it doesn't just affect our home life, it affects our spiritual life when things with our spouses are not the way God intends it to be. So the gravity of this is so, so important. Now, there was a recent social study done that I found interesting, and this is by no means an authoritative thing, but I do find this information valuable, is that that men talk to men differently, typically, than they talk to women. And the study tried to convey one of the pieces of evidence for that is that with men, there is an instinctual awareness that if there is a disagreement with another man, there's the potential for physical violence. And because there is more of a threat with someone who is large and someone who is comparable in size to you, that you approach that with more diplomatic mentality. Whereas if you're talking with someone who is much smaller than you, then there is an instinct to be more flippant and disregarding to that person. And so to a point, I think that's what's being hinted at here in 1 Peter, is that you do not disregard your spouse because they're smaller than you. And that is not a proper behavior. And that you show honor to them and that you show intentional awareness and understanding to them and that they don't have to worry about physical conflict with you. That's not even an option. That's not even a path that could be taken as you demonstrate that understanding and awareness to them. So now let's continue to our next verse in Colossians chapter 3. We're now going to look at children. Verse 20. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. I love passages that say what God likes. I always take note to highlight them and to just really compile a list of when God just explicitly says, this is what pleases me. And so we have one of these here, that children obeying their parents in everything, it pleases the Lord. Ephesians 6:2 also adds to honor your father and mother, as well as in here we see obedience. Now, listening to your parents, that is not always easy to do. I still remember being a child, and it was not always the most pleasant and easiest thing to do, but when it is so important to do. And I want us to remember what Jesus did when he was a child and remembered himself in the situation. If you recall, when Jesus was a child and he went to the temple and he stayed and remained at his temple speaking with the leaders and the teachers there, and his parents left and they couldn't find him for quite some time, and they went back and they found him, that he was still there, and they told him, "You need to come with us." And he said, "But I'm in my Father's house." But Jesus submitted and obeyed his parents even while he's aware of who he is. He seems to know he's the Son of God. And just to demonstrate how much God values this passage and this type of relationship in the family, God said, "Yes, Mama." I mean, think about that. Jesus knows this is my Father's house. I'm teaching people here. He's 14 or so. And Mom says, "You need to come home." And Jesus says, "Yes." And he obeys his parents in this. So just to emphasize how God views this part of the family dynamic is that children need to be listening to their parents. It's something that's pleasing to the Lord. And why does it please God for children to obey their parents? Well, multiple reasons. One is that it prepares us for a relationship with him, for our view of authority, for our view of somebody who understands more than us, and for us to submit to them, even when in the moment it doesn't make sense to us. That prepares us to trust a figure of authority. It also, importantly, is part of God's own nature. Remember when Jesus is in the garden and he tells his Father, "Not my will be done, but yours be done." This idea of submission and obeying your Father is part of God's own nature. And so it's so pleasing to have that voluntary obedience to your Father, to your parents. So it is a very pleasing thing to God. And so for children to know that you can please God by obeying your parents is super essential and motivating. That you're not just following your parents because they told you so. You're following God because God is pleased, or you're following your parents because God is pleased in that action. Now, our parents aren't perfect. All of us had parents. And sometimes they ask us to do good things. Sometimes they ask us to do things that we look back and like, "Well, that was probably not the wisest thing to do." And there is still honor and respect to be given, even to parents who are not the best parents. And the value in that is very similar to like when Thomas Edison was inventing the light bulb. And he was interviewed after he finally got it right. And he was asked, "How do you feel that you failed 1,000 times in making this light bulb?" Because he tried 1,000 different materials to try to create something that would illuminate. And his response to that was, "I didn't fail 1,000 times. I just learned 1,000 ways not to make a light bulb." And in the same way of like the language of love, this language of family we are born into, there's still value in recognizing, well, that's not the right way to go. If you grew up in a home that wasn't Christ-centered, you can still honor or respect that your experience as a child. It's recognizing, well, I learned that that was not right. That was not good. And I'm going to now go in a different direction. And so honoring that experience, giving respect to those moments is very important as we figure out how are we supposed to live day to day in the homes that we are born into. So now in 21, we go back to fathers. We're told, "Fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged." So fathers aren't just supposed to set high standards and then walk away, or just discipline when those standards aren't met. We are to be providers and definitely not provokers. We are again to provide an atmosphere, a quality of life for everyone in the house to thrive and to meet their highest potential. And this passage is very terrifying to me as a recently new father, in that it is possible for fathers to rob their children of courage. I mean, think about that. It's possible for us to provoke them, to treat them in a way that they become discouraged. And that is very sobering and creates a very somber reflective mentality for me, because I remember Jesus saying in Matthew 18:6 that if you cause a little one who believes in me to stumble, it's better for you to have this large stone tied around your neck and drowned in the ocean. So God takes the influence of young people so seriously, and no one has greater natural influence on children than their parents. And for us to understand that we can really influence our children for good or for bad, and that we go into this with that serious of a mindset, and that as fathers, we create an environment that, yeah, we give high expectations, we have high standards, but we're not provoking them whenever they're not meeting those standards, but we come along right beside them and meet them where they're at and help them meet those expectations, not only chastising the missing of that mark. So we are to not rob their courage. Now, a different part of this passage, verse 22, bondservants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Now, your translation here might say slave, and that is a very sensitive term, especially with our current political climate and so polarized, charged political views. But the word bondservant is a more proper translation here. And a bondservant in this time was a cultural and economically accepted way of when someone was paying off their debts, they could sell years of their service to an individual or to a group. And I could talk a lot about slavery, but that's not the point of today's lesson. But I will simply say that the dehumanization of an entire people or even an individual or the idea of enslavement is clearly condemned in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. Amos 1:6, the people of Gaza, God's going to wipe them out because they enslaved an entire people. In 1 Timothy 1:8 through 10, enslavers are right in the same list with murderers and liars, and it literally says does not line up with sound doctrine. So the idea of slavery, especially slavery in an American historical context, is way out of bounds scripturally. And so if your translation says slave in this passage, and you talk with people, and they're like, oh, Christianity condones slavery, it does not. And that's definitely something we need to be talking about and learning how to talk to people in our community that don't understand these passages. But that's not today's lesson. But I wanted to catch that rabbit really quickly. If you knew what I mean. Now, the idea though here of this is the best work ethic anyone can have, that what you're doing, the service you're doing, whether you're a bondservant or whether you have an occupation that's outside the home, that your work ethic is that my actions are not for man, they're for God, and that you are doing this out of the fear of the Lord. It makes me think of Nehemiah 5:15, where he's comparing what he's doing and mentioning that there were governors and people before me who were doing these crazy taxes on people, and they were extorting people, and I'm not going to do that. And he says, because the fear of the Lord, and that the motivation behind our actions should not be try to please people. It shouldn't be to be popular. It shouldn't be because we just think it's nice and cool. The moral compass we have and how we make decisions needs to be, well, what does God think about this? And God is the arbiter and decider for what's good or bad, not us or not people around us. And so the moral compass in how we navigate this life has to be God-centered. And when we have God as that center, we gain wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And on that note, Jesus did not come to bring social reform. He came to bring spiritual renewal. He didn't come to change every social system around the planet. He came to change every soul of every man and to redeem man and to bring man back to him. But spiritual renewal does lead to positive social reform. But Jesus did not come to set up an earthly kingdom, but a spiritual kingdom. And when that spiritual kingdom is present, it definitely changes the way a society and a culture operates. Now, continuing in this idea of work, whatever you do, verse 23, work heartily, as for the Lord and not for men. Your life, the years that you have here on this earth, involves millions of other people you interact with, and your life ripples out way farther than we even understand. And your life, though, is not about your interactions with other people. Your life is about your interaction with God. And that what you do is not about how you're treating other people. It's about what are you doing with God? And that our actions are good or bad are laid at the feet of God, not just people around us. I'm always blown away when I'm reading the New Testament and I see Jesus interacting with people. And so often, people will come to him and Jesus will forgive their sins. And he say, I forgive you. Which is so bizarre because, you know, if you wrong somebody, if you cheat on somebody, if you hurt somebody, you transgress and, like, damage them. And Jesus says, I forgive you. You know, if Robert and I have a fight like we always do, and, you know, and I, and if I, you know, if we're fighting and you know, it comes to blows and I hit him, and then if Kirkland's then like, I forgive you for that, Mike, and Robert's like, what? Like, how, what about me? And what that shows us is that our actions, good or bad, are laid at the feet of Jesus. Because when we wrong each other, we're actually missing the mark that God set and stepping out of his standard. And it's a wrong action, not because this other person didn't like it. It's wrong because that's not what God taught and that's not what his law and his design is. So when we're working, when we are interacting, when we are serving whatever role that we find ourselves in work-wise, our actions aren't to be done for just people around us. They're to be done for God and laid before the feet of Christ. I got to teach at a high school in South Africa for a few years, and one of the classes I got to teach at this public school was called Life Orientation. And it was a class about all different world religions and how those religions give you different perspectives on the world. And I always got to teach the Christianity part of it. And it was really a wonderful experience and blessing to do that. And as I was leaving South Africa with a teacher there, she gave me a poem that she had ended up hanging up on the wall there in her class. And it's called The Final Analysis. And I have it here. This was the paper she gave me. And so I'm going to read you this poem. People are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. What you spend years building, someone may destroy overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today, people may often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may just never be enough. Give the world the best you have anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it's between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. So this, I looked this up, and this was written by Mother Teresa, and I think that the content of this is quite spot on, that like we see in this passage, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, and that our interactions in this life isn't just about how we're connecting to people around us, it's, you know, what's our connection to the Lord in all this, and there's such freedom in understanding this, in that you are to receive your reward from God and not from man. And we see here that this recontextualizes our home life. that wives are to be submissive to their husbands because of God. That wives are to that husbands are to love their wives because of God. That children are to obey their parents because of God. And that servants are to serve because of God. And it really removes the idea of, well, I'm going to love my wife so that she'll be more submissive to me. Or I'll submit to my husband so that maybe he'll start loving me. Or maybe I'll obey my parents so I can get what I want. Or maybe I'm going to serve this way so I can climb the ladder to get to the position that I want. It removes all of that, and it instead focuses on, are you going to be faithful what God expects of you? And it makes it, there's freedom in that, where you're not trying to achieve some outcome with somebody around you. You're trying to be faithful to God's design. And that the reward comes from the Lord, not from these other people. Now, typically you do reap what you sow. And if you are loving and you're submissive and you're obedient and you're hardworking, very much like Joseph, and you know, that leads to good things. But my point is that there's freedom in knowing that your life is between you and God, and that our interactions with each other are in the context of, okay, what does God want me to do? Not just me trying to control my environment by my actions. So let's now look at our last verse this morning, verse 24. Oh, and 25. There we go. Knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward, you are serving the Lord Christ. For the wrongdoer will be paid back for the wrong he has done, and there is no partiality. There's freedom of what we get to do with our lives because we can know that the Lord is 100% aware of each of our actions. And understanding that God will settle things in this life, that the business of payback is not our business, it's his. That understanding the injustice that's in this world, which is a real feeling, and I think it's even a godly feeling, when we look at things and go, that's wrong. That's a godly instinct, and that is right. But to then fix that wrong, to pay back that wrong, vengeance is mine, says the Lord. And this idea here is so important, that the wrongdoer will be paid back. And we can step away from that business of having to pay people back for the wrong they do. And know that God's not going to make any mistakes. He's not going to let anyone good or bad slip through the cracks. And that he's going to be just. There's going to be no partiality. And so we can take a deep breath and know that the wrongs will be made right. And that it's not our business to make things right. God will settle things. He's not going to make any mistakes. It's his business and not ours. So from today's lesson, our home life, our work life, that's like 90% of the time that God blesses us with. And this dynamic of husband and wife and children and worker, that type of dynamic and the things we talked about today, it's not just suggestions, they're not just self-help ideas, but this is God's very design for how we're supposed to operate. And it needs to be adhered to. He knows what he's doing in designing these relationships. If we're just left to our own devices, we're basically looking up on the internet how we should feel about tetanus, and it does not lead to good things. If we go to the great physician and see how things should be done, it will lead to good things, as we can see here. That these are things that please the Lord. And he knows what he's talking about and showing us how we're supposed to interact with each other. So let's follow his design, not our own understanding.